This is Meredith for Real, the Curious Introvert, and I'm Meredith. Here we explore the taboo questions that people think but don't ask out loud. Questions that need nuanced answers unavailable even to Google. My mission, and yours if you choose to accept it, is to inspire curiosity within yourself and the world around you. Each episode is different, so bring your ADD and your earbuds and have a look around. We're covering health today, but in true Curiositor fashion, we're taking a unique and unexpected approach, and it doesn't get much more unexpected than monitoring your heart health through a cock ring. My guest explains the science of how nocturnal erections and cardiovascular health are connected, how medications might be sabotaging your sex life, and why knowing your data even matters. Overall, above the nutrition wars and the frustrating interactions that we've all had with the medical system, what I got out of this was that more and more people want to take ownership of their health. And this guest states the case for why sexual health shouldn't be an afterthought, but included in that journey. And as he said, a leading indicator. If you end up liking this episode, you'll also like the one I did with the owner of an intimate care service for adults with disabilities about medically assisted sex. That's episode 158. Lastly, if you like giving your opinion and getting free stuff, you're officially invited to join my private Facebook group. Click the link in the episode description to request to join. All right, friends, keep it curious. Nearly 700,000 Americans die from heart disease each year. That's double the number of those who died from COVID in 2020. But despite this shocking reality, we see very few smart solutions to help us measure what our personal risk is. We check our cholesterol, we take the statin, listen for arrhythmias, but what if the clues lie below the belt? My next guest is a fellow of American College of Emergency Medicine and worked in emergency medicine for 26 years. He's now the CEO of FirmTech, a medical technology startup. He and his team have developed a smartwatch for your member to help men assess ED and cardiovascular risk. Today, he's going to help us understand the connection between nocturnal erections and cardiovascular health and probably answer the questions you're thinking right now. Innovating and trailblazing, working smarter and harder, putting a ring on it, Dr. Elliot Justin. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
I had to put those little puns in there. I thought you would appreciate those. You know, you're a smart guy, but not a serious guy, and I appreciate that about you.
Well, as an emergency physician, I can tell you that short of a heart attack or stroke, there's no emergency that concerns a man as much as a limp penis. So... And you and I live in this incredible age of healthcare wearables for all sorts of body functions,
yeah.
Smart watches, smart rings, smart bands, and there's a gap, and that gap is sex. And sex can reveal not just quantifying what's going on when men or women are having sex, can tell us not just about sexual health, but it's a reflection of our cardiovascular health. So we have the world's first underwearable, which is the FirmTech tech ring.
I love it. I think people don't think of their sexual health as a part of their health, and especially nothing about that enters the conversation with your physicians. I have to tell you, though, I have a little bit of a confession. Most of the bookers that reach out to me to book a guest on the show, like they book on behalf of other people, they're not a fit. When I got yours, I was like, okay, this is interesting. But as a woman who's body and health is frequently misunderstood by health professionals / not cared about. I have to say the idea that another technology thing was coming out to help men with their erection, at first I was a little perturbed because I was like, what? Another thing for men? What about us ladies? Help me understand why this is not just a vanity product for gym bros. How is this more than that?
I didn't understand how important the relationship between sex and health either. I've never had a doctor ask me about my sexual health, state of my marriage, the impact of medications upon my sexual health or performance. And that's a real neglect. I'm at fault for not asking the question as well of my patients. Doctors really inhibit about this. And as a consequence, people suffer because men and women are put on medications, especially antihypertensives, antidepressants, that really have a serious impact, negative impact upon their sexual health. Let's talk about cardiovascular health first, because I was ignorant about this relationship. And when I think about it, it's so obvious because it's all about blood. Are you pumping enough blood? And what's the state of your blood vessels? So several years ago, 3 years ago now, when Dr. James O'Talley, a professor of urology at the University of Utah, came to me and said, I was doing medical technology at the time, and said, gee, I want to come up with a way of counting the number of nocturnal erections because they're a leading indicator of a man's cardiovascular health and probably a woman's cardiovascular health too. And I thought, like, really? Why do we care? I mean, everyone knows about, as we call it, morning wood. We laugh about it, but leading indicator is really powerful. So I was kind of like taking it back. Leading indicator is beyond association. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, if a healthy man has 3 to 5 nocturnal erections per night, and that number goes down, it's predictive that that man will have a heart attack or a stroke. So think about high blood pressure. I mean, there are like 80 million plus Americans who own high blood pressure machines. High blood pressure is unlike COVID, is a real pandemic, a chronic pandemic. You know, more than half the adult population over age 50 has high blood pressure and or diabetes. So if you could predict that someone's going to have a heart attack or a stroke by following the number of nocturnal erections, this would be profoundly valuable. This would be like a sixth vital sign. And what do men care more about in this age of wearables? How many steps it took yesterday or the status of their penis? And so, and the question's rhetorical, especially asking a woman. They know what men care about.
Well, we care about our men and we care about, you know, like the heart risk. Like, it's a question I think more people are asking. If a growing number of people, Americans, are dying from heart disease each year, it was 650,000 in 2020, I think. And now it's 700. And that's a CDC number. I mean, more people want to know, how can I assess my risk? And this is such an unexpected way.
Yes. So, and actually a really easy way, because the device that we came up with is comfortable. It's not like these hard silicone cock rings that are sold to men for, you know, $10 or $25 in a sex toy store. Ours is made out of a soft, comfortable elastomer. Most men, after once or twice, they don't even know it's on. I mean, I'll wake up in the morning, you know, to pee, and like, it's still on. I'm not even aware of it. So it's really comfortable. And you know, when I first looked at my data, I thought, this is actually more interesting to me than my electrocardiogram, because I have like 5 a night, and that means I'm in good cardiovascular health. So how do nocturnal erections reflect cardiovascular health? Well, in order to have an erection, 3 systems have to be working. 1, you have to have a good pump. You have to be pumping blood. And 2, you have to have good nerves. And 3, you have to have good pipes, veins, and arteries and veins. One of the most common causes of erectile dysfunction in men as they get older is they have decreasing blood flow on the arterial side. If they have hypertension or diabetes, they get hardening. They are hardening of the small arteries. It's hard for them to attain erection, or it takes them longer to attain erection because it takes them longer to pump blood into it. But then all men, as they get older, get venous insufficiency. So what do we mean by venous insufficiency? We mean that the veins are not holding the blood in the penis. So we have arterial flow in, venous return on the opposite side. So to draw an analogy, if I were to sit on a plane for 5 or 6 hours and get off the plane, I'm 71 years old, and my socks might feel a little tight, and my rings are going to feel a little tight too. Women are familiar with this as well too, because they wear rings more than men do. So why is that? Because as you get older, the smooth muscle around your veins, they just weaken with age. So as we get older, and as our number of nocturnal erections, or the strength and duration will decrease because we're getting less blood, or we're not retaining blood in the penis as long overnight, we're just not pumping as much blood. So what we're measuring, firmness, hardness, and measuring duration. And both those things will deteriorate as the heart pumps less blood, or as the arteries and veins become less effective.
I feel like you just like struck gold in the one way you could get men to care about their heart health, you know, like through their penis. I want to go back to something you said at the beginning, just to get clarification. So there was another doctor who brought this idea to you. I'm just curious, like, how much has this been studied? Is this a hypothesis? Has this been proven? Is it causation, correlation? Like, has all that stuff happened?
It's not an association. It's predictive. There are over 10 papers showing that the number of nocturnal erections you have and tracking it is predictive of cardiovascular disease, with the endpoints being heart attack and stroke. So these papers were done with a device called the Rigiscan that goes back to the late 80s or early 90s. It looks like something Dr. Frankenstein would put in the penis. It's not something that can be used at home in privacy, you know, conveniently. You have to go to a sleep lab, or you have to take this device home that straps to your leg has electrodes coming out of it.
Oh, God.
And it's obviously it interferes with sleep. you know, our device is 21st century. It's Bluetooth enabled. There's an app. It's comfortable. There are no wires, and you don't have to go to an office. You can monitor this at home the way you might monitor your blood pressure or other parameters.
Is there a connection between REM sleep and nocturnal erections? I mean, because obviously there's the connection between your heart health, but is there also a connection between your sleep quality?
That's a great question. So the sleep doctors think that every episode of REM sleep is accompanied by an erection in a man that's healthy. It could be a weak erection. It might not last very long, but it's accompanied by an erection. And by the way, we think the same thing is probably true for women as well, too. But so our device then becomes a way of actually monitoring sleep. And we're doing a paper soon comparing our device to Oura. Oura is a really popular ring monitor. And that they're measuring pulse variability and the accelerometer, something that measures movements, to say, gee, you're in REM sleep or you're not in REM sleep. I got intrigued by this because I have about like a half dozen engineers involved in this project. And all these guys are data geeks, and they have Oura, Whoop. And they noticed that they're recording about 10 to 15% more REM sleep if they're measuring by the duration of their erections at night than they are with the ring. So we're going to look at that. I think our device will become another way of looking at the quality of sleep that you're having.
Oh, that's really interesting. I've heard you say that this information, you know, I alluded to like gym bros at the beginning, because I'm just not, I don't own any wearables. I'm not the person that becomes obsessed with like the data and our heart rate and the steps and all of that. And so the utility of this is information informing decisions. That's what I'm gathering, at least. And I think I've heard you allude to that in other conversations that you've had. So can you give me an example of decisions that a man would make if he realizes, oh, I am not at any high risk for a cardiovascular event, or decisions that he would make if he is at risk that otherwise might get overlooked?
Sure. Because, you know, I sometimes call them my patients, but they're really customers. So we've sold over 12,000, well, close to 12,000 devices now. And I've had conversations probably close to 90 to 100 people. There are two men who've used our device who thought they were in good health, but they noted they had declined nocturnal erections and went to the doctors, and they turned out to need cardiac catheterization. They had they had disease. Now, I'm not going to say their lives are saved, but they were able to – a problem was revealed before it became clinically apparent. Obviously, you want to know that you would benefit from catheterization before you have a heart attack and have the catheterization after the heart attack. We have probably our youngest customer, 26 years old. He and his wife recently married, moved. Both of them have taken on new jobs. They're trying to have a child, and they're having difficulty having a child. They're actually having difficulty having sex because he's having difficulty sustaining really, really hard enough erections for penetration and satisfactory ejaculation, basically. And he got a device. His wife got the device for him because women are more up on these things than men. She had heard about us on an early podcast that we did. And he had only 1 to 2, he had 2 week nocturnal erections per night, and they were weak. And they, you know, we have 1 to 10 scale, and his were in the 3 to 4 scale. And he had to acknowledge to his wife that he was actually secretly taking steroids because he's a bodybuilder. He stopped taking his steroids, and she was pregnant in 3 months, and they now have a son. And that was life changing for them. We have recently had a man who was having difficulty getting erections. He's in his 50s. He travels a lot internationally. He was taking Ambien, sleep, Zolpidem for sleep, as many people do. Well, I know from just my own personal experience with Zolpidem, it wipes out the nocturnal erections. So he stopped taking the Zolpidem, and he had zero nocturnal erections. Zero.
Wait, if nocturnal erections mean REM sleep, and REM sleep means nocturnal erections, and you take a sleeping pill, and then you don't have any erections, doesn't that mean that it's screwing up your REM sleep?
Absolutely. Then those medications will do that. Then they should only be taken episodically, as needed. But a lot of people get habituated. They come to need them in order to fall asleep. Our oldest client that I'm aware of is 84 years old. His wife, 82 years old. His wife was in her early 70s. And for like 15 months, things had deteriorated. First, he couldn't ejaculate. And then he found it hard to sustain erection long enough for satisfactory intercourse. For both them, I'm certain anxiety began to contribute to the issues as well,
of course,
too.
Yeah.
But he showed me his medication list. He was taking 5 medications. And getting back to your conversation about doctors earlier, not only do doctors not talk about sex, they don't talk to each other. So if you're seeing multiple doctors, if you're seeing a urologist for your prostatic hypertrophy and you have to decrease flow, or taking flow medication, there's one erection killer. And then you're seeing a cardiologist, seeing an internist, they have you on different medications for blood pressure or control of cardiac rhythm. And then you're seeing a psychologist, psychiatrist, and they put you on an antidepressant. This guy's taking five medications that are what we call cock killers. And I encouraged him to cut that number down to two, and he and his wife now are having sex twice a week, and they're much happier. So there are a lot of life-changing decisions that can come about as a result of men taking these medications. We have had two people say that they were getting divorced because of it, one male, one female. Because if a man is having nocturnal erections and he's not getting up with his partner, there's something else going on. He's either having sex with someone else, or there are issues in the relationship, communication issues or other problems.
Wow. So for like a guy who feels like he probably has plenty of nocturnal erections, what's the motive for using a tracking device like this?
Well, you don't know whether you're having a good number of nocturnal erections unless you have the device.
So, but I could just, you know how you kind of have pretend conversations in your head? I could just imagine maybe a few men listening going, oh, well, that's good for them. I don't need that, you know? But I mean, establishing a baseline would probably be helpful, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the point. If you're a man over the age of 40 or 45, you're entering the heart disease risk area. If you're a man under that age and have diabetes or hypertension, especially, you're already at risk. And you should want to know your data. Now, a man my age would want to follow the data more frequently. I'm 71 years old. A man who's 45 or 50 who has an adequate number of nocturnal erections, you know, maybe they want to check their data twice a year or three or four times a year. I mean, just the way you might go to a doctor to it, you know, just a handful of times a year. So, but the form itself is a value to men. And I was really unaware of that until I, you know, for me, from my perspective, cock rings are novelties, or until a couple of years ago. I don't regard them as novelties right now, nor do I regard them as aids. I regard them as enhancers. Just the way women have regard. Well, put it this way. In the 70s and 80s, as vibrators began to become more popular among women, there's still sort of this sort of shame about them. Well, there's a natural orgasm and there's an unnatural orgasm. And now vibrators are in the mainstream. You know, my mother's was in a storage closet hidden away, and my daughter takes them on dates. And so they're in the mainstream. It's no longer overall regarded, at least in our culture. It's not regarded as something shameful. It's regarded as not an aid, but as an enhancer, actually, and as fun. The ring becomes a way of getting harder, staying harder, and having more pleasure, because the more blood's retained in the penis for a longer period of time, the more intense the orgasm. It's a profound confidence builder as well for people who do have issues, who do have confidence issues. But basically, as I say, beyond rock hard, there's cock ring hard. Nothing will get a man harder than a ring, and doctors are ignorant about this.
Yeah, but I've heard you say that it's healthy or advisable for men, I don't know, maybe women too, I don't remember what exactly, two orgasms a week. That's what the doctor prescribes. And the reason that I'm bringing that up is because I just did an episode, I don't know, a few weeks back, called Can a Sexless Marriage Survive? And in my research for preparing for that episode, I learned a lot of women, at least, they don't care that they're not having sex. They just, it's like, meh, I guess that time's over. Like, they just don't care. So I found it interesting when then I learned in researching for this episode that there is a health benefit for having two orgasms a week minimally. Can you explain that?
Men who have sex every day, their cortisol level goes down 50%. That's the stress hormone. Men over the age of 70 who have sex twice a week decrease the cardiac risk by 50%. And that's where that specific recommendation comes from. We doctors, we make recommendations to men and to women about diet, exercise, don't smoke, don't drink, et cetera, et cetera. It's really striking that we don't make recommendations about sex. And I think it's just because we're too inhibited to make those recommendations. So I have a scientific advisory board of renowned male and female urologists. And we want to say, we as a company want to make a recommendation. And we think that two is a good place to start. So it's a use it or lose it situation for men and for women. You can make yourself better looking and more attractive by going to the gym, but you can improve your sexual performance specifically sexual performance by going to the gym. Because sexual performance in men and women is about smooth muscle function. And you can't exercise smooth muscle in the gym. You can only exercise skeletal muscle. So an analogy would be, if you and I were in a concentration camp and we're starved, and someone then took us to a three-star Michelin restaurant and said, gorge yourself, we would get sick because we haven't exercised smooth muscle involved in our gastrointestinal system. And the same thing applies to our sexual system as well, too. So you have to. I have to wonder if these – and granted, there is a spectrum of sexual desire among people. It's a bell curve. But I think what happens in marriages, unfortunately, many people, is that if people have regular sex, they feel more comfortable with it. And I recommend that people plan for pleasure, just the way they plan their exercise, or they plan meals. You don't just, you know, go to the refrigerator and say, hey, what's for dinner tonight? Expect to have a good meal. It's like, oh, my God, it's fucking leftover chicken. nor does a chef in a restaurant say, hey, what am I going to cook today? I think what happens in marriages, and then people want to rationalize this, well, I now feel awkward about sex. I don't feel confident. I don't feel competent. So I want to say that that's okay. But what happens as a consequence, and I'll talk about women, if you're not having sex, is the clitoris atrophies. And then it becomes even harder. By the way, same thing applies to men. Once you have atrophy, it's really hard to recover function. In addition to which, you are exercising the pelvic floor muscles, which are important for bowel and bladder function. Women especially have the pubococcygeus muscle, which is the muscle system that in men and women is the signal of orgasm. It'll atrophy without use. I would speculate that women who don't have sex, have sexless marriages, probably in the end end up with more pelvic floor muscle problems as a consequence. And my personal observation, I don't know what yours would be like, Meredith, I'd like to hear, is I only know one successful sexless marriage. All the other ones is divorce. And often that divorce is initiated by the women.
Well, and just because you're still married doesn't mean it's a successful marriage. So I don't even know, even though I did, you know, speak with a lot of people before making that particular episode, it's not a full picture. So I don't know if I can comment like, oh yeah, it's successful. Or it's really just what, at the end of the day, like, what do you want? And what I love about what you and your team are doing is you are taking something that for some people is like a novelty, an extra, a treat, you know, like a special thing, and it's not making it not special. It's just also making it special and urgent. And I think that's really interesting because we tend to separate these systems within ourselves, our mental health, our physical health, our sexual mm-hmm. health, our cardiovascular health. And it really puts us back in a position to see ourselves as a whole person. I love that you pointed out that SSRIs can have sexual side effects. I did not know that until I heard you say it. That's really interesting. I think if anybody gets anything out of this, please ask your doctor what the sexual side effects are of a medication. They try so hard to put you on prescriptions. Some are needed, some are questionable, but asking that question, I think, is an empowering one. So I wanted to ask you, when your customers/patients are assessing their baseline and then kind of seeing where they go from there, they do take into account, am I on an SSRI? Your gentleman that was taking steroids, what medicines are having sexual side effects? What part of my relationship may be impacting the sexual part of who I am? But also, you mentioned in another interview that drinking a lot of beer, smoking a lot of weed can also have an impact on your ability to have erections. And then on top of that, men who are circumcised usually go kind of downhill, no pun intended, in that area a little sooner than those who are uncircumcised. So how do you help people who have this wide variety of situations kind of assess where they are versus where they should be?
Well, these interventions or medications or vices, if you will, they're all have can have impacts. And so I'll put it this way. What I want is people to see this as a tool to assess where they are and then decide, well, where do I want to be? So if a man has ED, okay, can he stop its progress utilizing this tool? If he doesn't have ED, can he prevent it? We're empowering people with knowledge that their doctors don't have. Empowering people, so it's up to them to make the decisions. And we encourage people to take our data to the healthcare providers. But I suspect that if you're ready to embarrass talk about sex with your doctor, people are doing things on their own. I have men tell me that, gee, I cut my SSRI dose in half, and now I can ejaculate again. Do they tell their doctor? I don't know. I doubt it.
I mean, that's kind of sad, but that's kind of like where a lot of us are, you know, in the American health system is we're going rogue.
We're going rogue. Exactly. Well, that's a whole other area of this, which we didn't touch on, which is that, and I think especially after COVID, people have a good reason to distrust doctors because, you know, none of the major recommendations were supported by science. The vaccine, lockdowns, social distancing, masks, all these things, they lied to us about them. And as a consequence, people don't trust doctors and they turn to integrative medicine, naturopaths. And I don't want to diss those people either because I think a lot of them are sincere and a lot of some things they say are probably beneficial. But they also are motivated by money just the way doctors are. And their knowledge is also limited and they also bring their particular biases to it. So when it comes to nutraceuticals for men and women, pills that you can get at health food stores and health food section of the pharmacy that's in your supermarket, we haven't found an oral pill that works for men. I suspect the same thing's true for women. So I like to say that we're the hopes, there are dopes, and we all could be dopes. I've been a dope about certain things. If I go into my bathroom right now, you would see 8 different vitamin products. I don't think any of them work, by the way, but I take them or take some of them. I don't know why. It's people send me these things and because they're going to make me stronger, younger, harder, whatever. I don't think it. But what's cool about what we're doing is that people can actually say, is this really working? So I think people need to be leery about taking nutraceuticals as well too, what they spend their money on.
Yeah.
And that gets the PDE5 medications with Viagra and Cialis being the big ones. Are they really working for you? What's the right dose for you? So we doctors are, you know, we just, hey, you got ED? Here, take 10 milligrams of Cialis. Well, is that the right dose? Right dose 5? Right dose 20? If you have a device like ours, like the Tech Ring, you can actually say, what is really working? And I can tell you, our data shows, and there'll be research confirming this, that if a man wants to last longer, a ring is more effective than a medication. But Big Pharma is so powerful, so influential, and the doctors are not thinking about rings. They're thinking about pills.
Well, and you pointed out stigma too, so that's part of the equation. Yeah. This might be a good time to talk about the device itself. And like, do you have it handy? Because I know you said you wanted to. So there's two different ones. Let's talk about the nighttime one, the night tracker one at first.
Sure. So we call this a Tech Ring. So unlike erection rings, it's made out of a really soft elastomer. It's comfortable. It's comfortable for women during intercourse as well too. Inside the device, there's a pressure gauge right there. And inside the hook, there's a strain gauge. So it's easy on, easy off. It hooks. It actually was inspired by the bra because the bra opens and closes the hook. A bra is essentially a ring that opens and closes with a hook. And my thought when I was, well, let's make an erection ring that's not made out of silicone because silicone is uncomfortable. Women know this because bras are irritating to their skin. Let's make it out of a soft elastomer. Let's have it easy on, easy off because it opens and closes with a hook. And let's bed sensors. Now this device is also an effective erection ring because you can make it tighter by pulling it through the loop and it's easy on, easy off. I'll turn my phone on so I can show you the app. We're in the Bluetooth and Google stores and we provide men with the type of data that you would actually, I think, more valuable data than you would get off an Oura or a Whoop. Because as I said before, we're telling men something directly about their cardiovascular health and their sexual health.
Hey, Curiositors, just a quick pause to show gratitude to our sponsors and give you some special deals. My husband and I have been using Liquid IV since 2019. We love that you put it in cold water and it actually dissolves and, you know, tastes awesome. Lately, strawberry lemonade flavor has been my go-to. They also have sugar-free now. And in just one stick, I get 5 essential vitamins and hydrated 2 times faster than water alone. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code CURIOUS at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code CURIOUS at liquidiv.com. When I started listening to podcasts, I could never find the one go-to show. They were either too self-helpy or too bro-y until I found the Jordan Harbinger Show. Honestly, I feel like it's a sister show to my show. If you like my show, you are 100% gonna love his. Some of my favorite episodes include the one with the man held hostage by Somali pirates, episode 115, and the one with the pain psychologist about how pain lives in the brain, not the body, episode 661. But you can also download a starter pack of episodes by going to jordanharbinger.com/start. And Jordan himself, super interesting. He's a recovering Wall Street attorney who speaks 5 languages, was kidnapped twice, and used to run a tour company that took Westerners to North Korea. Yeah. You like it already, don't you? I told you you would. You can't go wrong with adding the Jordan Harbinger Show to your rotation. It's incredibly interesting. There's never a dull show. Search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Spring has sprung, but so have the mosquitoes, and that can be a real buzzkill. See what I did there? I've been using Insect's mosquito service since 2019, and they continue to impress me. They guarantee their work, and pollinators are always top of mind. Don't wait till the last minute to get on their schedule. If you're in the Florida Panhandle or the Gulf Coast of Alabama, give Insect a call, ensec.net. The Florida Panhandle isn't just the home of your favorite podcaster. That's me, by the way. Shameless, I know. But it's also a go-to spot for a lot of families on vacation. Don't plan a Pensacola trip without getting tickets to the UWF Historic Trust. It's good for a whole week, and it's a great indoor activity option. You'll recognize Trader John's, where I record the show, in the Pensacola Museum of History. Get your tickets in person so you can show the agent one of my emails and get $2 off an adult ticket. historicpensacola.org. Now back to the show. Remember to stay till the end, where I give you a sneak peek of next week's episode.
So are you recommending that men wear that every night, just like as you would like an aura ring, and you wearing that every day? You're wearing this every night to kind of see really. Where you're at?
No, I think, you know, it takes 4 uses for the sensors to adjust to the individual penis. But after that, It's on as needed basis. And we have men who do use it all the time because they're data geeks. The same guys who, you know, have like 2 rings and they'll have
the gym bros. Yeah.
Yeah.
The guys that wake up and they're like, my sleep score was 10 points higher, and they're excited about it. I find that so odd.
I don't think that there are many of those. I think the men who really benefit from the data are older men. The men who have prostate surgery and are monitoring their recovery is profoundly valuable for them. Or the men who are taking multiple medications, or the doctor starting them a new medication. What's been interesting, and it's unfortunate, is we have people who say they don't want to tell their doctor that they're testing their blood pressure medicine or their antidepressant or their sleep medication against using our device. It's sad because they're afraid to do it. So no, the tech ring, to my mind, it's a consumer wellness product. So, you know, people don't check their blood pressure every day unless they're on a new medication. So I'm 71 years old. I use it twice a month for myself, or maybe sometimes 4 times a month, but usually twice a month myself, because I want to know about the status of my heart health, frankly, as well as my sexual health is obvious to me because my wife and I make love regularly.
Well, that's really interesting because, I mean, one of the first things that I thought of when I learned about this device was the impact of EMFs, like on soft tissue. And so I thought, oh my God, if, you know, guys wearing that every night, like, isn't that something we should be worried about? But, you know, knowing that it's not required to wear it every single night in order to get the data one needs is reassuring.
Yeah, this is what it looks like. This is my score. Anything up top, we give a fitness score. Anything above a 6 is normal.
Okay.
And I'll show you what data looks like, an overnight recording.
So for those listening, it's like it looks like the ring on the Apple Watch, and then it's just a number in the center.
And there is a healthy night. You can see the big one on the left. I'm having sex with my wife, and then I'm having 3 nocturnal erections afterwards. So this, for me, is, you know, good health. And if I hit a 10, if my max went to a 9, previously I wouldn't have known about it. But that would be a sign of an issue. When do men start using this device regularly is when they see a problem. And then we encourage them. Well, get 4 nights in a row. Because you can have a bad night. If I'm under a lot of stress, my nocturnals will suck. So it's important to get data over time if you do see a problem.
Oh, that's so cool, because something that I have become aware of in the last like 2 years is the idea of interoception. I interviewed Jesse Coomer. He's like a breathwork guy. He's great. And he talks about how connecting your mind with what your body is doing and vice versa can really help inform lots of things. And it's really like the beginning of healthy eating, the beginning of stress management, the beginning of pretty much everything. Right. And so I love that this helps to facilitate that in a way that maybe people who would be resistant to more like hippy dippy, like journal, sure. Then that's how you'll know if you're stressed. And you're like, no, have a cock ring.
Get your data. Put a ring on it.
Ring on it. Yeah, exactly. So tell me about the other one. There's sure. Like that one's for sleeping, but you can also use it during sex. And then the other correct. One is just for sex.
The other one's just really just for sex. Okay. Well, the other one is also an effective way of addressing erectile dysfunction. This one, the Colicola Maximum Performance Ring, we sold like 2,000 of these almost in this like the last 3 months. I designed this for pleasure, recognizing that they also have a medical benefit. I don't need the medical benefit. So what I wanted to do was increase the ejaculatory phase by 50%. So if you prolong the ejaculation in a man, it's a more powerful orgasm. And my ejaculation goes from 4 seconds to 7 seconds. And my wife says she's glad the kids are out of the house because I'm loud for the first time. I actually find it to be, and in fact, other guys say this too, it's almost like a pillow chewing experience because it's so intense. And that's great. And it's more powerful, more effective than a PDE5 medication, than a sustaining erection. Now we're going to the ED world. So there's the pleasure world. And now we're in the ED world. This ring plus a PDE5 medication will produce the longest lasting erection in men. So if men have ED, this is a profound confidence builder.
And you can wear it with a condom?
You can wear it with a condom. Okay, I'm grinning right now because it's been such a game changer in our marriage. I've been married for 36 years now. We're 36 years in May. And we don't make love without it. Before this, 3 years ago, we never used erection rings. And now it's part of our routine. Why? Because there's no longer this rush or pressure to orgasm. My wife's 70 years old. Before this, it would be, okay, well, now we're both turned on. You know, let's both have orgasms. Whereas with this, I know that I'm going to be hard for an hour, comfortably hard, with less stimulation. So the experience is much more romantic. There are more positions, there's more talking, there's more romantic because there's no longer, there's no pressure. I've had so many people comment on that, especially men who struggle, who are post-prostate surgery, they're taking meds, they need to pump, et cetera, et cetera. For them to use a ring is good for both people in the relationship.
Yeah, I heard from a couple of people that very similar situations to what you're talking about in regards to having a sexless or nearly sexless marriage. There was a lot of medical stuff, and you're right. Their doctors did not offer them any options. In fact, it was they themselves on their own who concluded, oh, I guess this is how it is now. I guess this is just, and I'm like, oh my gosh, please at least talk to your urologist and see, is that a consequence? But they just felt so much shame and discouragement. So it's nice to have some more options, I think.
And then there soon will be options for women because we have tested a similar device for women. It's not in a form that could be commercialized. We need to raise money in order to do that. But women would benefit from the data as well too. With data, men and women can assess the impact of everything from diseases and medications to marijuana, alcohol, supplements, diet, exercise, and relationships on their sexual performance.
And yeah, I mean, that's major.
I am predicting in the next 3 to 5 years, testosterone therapy for women will become the norm for perimenopausal and postmenopausal women. You know, my observation, both personal and prescribing, and I'm not an expert in female sexuality, but I have women on my board who are experts. This is what people need. So if you change the mind, if you restore libido, if you restore desire, it's a game changer in marriages. It's a game changer. It's you know, for people.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. There is some concern around all wearables, that data privacy, where does this data go? For example, I could totally see life insurance companies or even just health insurance companies trying to get their grubby little hands on this data, because if they can see that, oh, a person with XY data points is at a higher risk for a cardiovascular event, we're not going to cover them, or their premium is going to be outrageous. So where does the data go? Who owns it? How do you keep privacy for the people that are using it?
So our data is stored in the cloud. It's Amazon Web Services. So Amazon Web Services is government compliant. It's called HIPAA, Health Information Privacy Act compliant. I don't have any access to the data. There's only one person in the company who has access to the data, and he signed a HIPAA contract, meaning he'd go to jail if he violated it. So when the data goes to the cloud, people can create their own email address. So, you know, people can make up any name they want, if they want. But most people just give their name and their email address because we need that for business purposes. It goes to the cloud, and then that personal information is translated into anonymous information. You know, random numbers are assigned to that account. Those random numbers are all we have access to on our side of the business. Now, could someone hack the system? Someone would have to hack Amazon and Amazon Web Services. And there are hundreds of millions of people have their health data around the world stored on Amazon. So it's about as good as it gets. But the real risks that we've seen with the data are twofold. One, someone picks up your phone and says, "Hey, Meredith, who are you having sex with at 2 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday? I thought you were at work." and we have had people snoop, or as my daughter told me when she was like in third grade, "Dad, don't you get it? Girls snoop." I forget what she was. She discovered that her older brother had Playboy stuffed under his pillow. "What are you doing in this bedroom?" And I said, "Well, don't you know, Dad? Girls snoop." Anyway, we have had two instances that I'm aware of women picking up someone's app. And
is say, that the two that you mentioned earlier who got divorced?
What's one of them?
Interesting. Why Amazon for data? I mean, Amazon
Web Services is the biggest store of data in the
but
world.
But Amazon, the website where we shop on, they are like one of the bigger data aggregators, and they don't really like care so much about privacy. So why choose them as opposed to, I don't know who else there is, but someone else?
They have a separate business for healthcare. Are they cheating and lying? How the fuck, you know? They could be, but Amazon Web Services for healthcare data is regarded as the premier service in the world. Now, we could have a private server, but then we weren't able to hook it up with the commercial aspects of the business. So your hospital probably is storing its data on Amazon. My doctor stores his data on Amazon. The Blues do business with Amazon. Here's the other problem with data privacy, which was that there are people who should want to see this data, and they don't want to see it. So there are people that, and we deal with some of these companies, they don't actually want to do research on the value of what it is that they're doing.
Well, I was thinking that, like, if you've got this information and you assess at some point, oh my gosh, okay, we have a problem. What is someone supposed to do with that information? Because as you alluded to earlier, you take information to your doctor, and it's like they're offended. You know, oh my God, you researched something on your own, you bitch. Like, they are just so, I'm sure there's some of them that aren't, but most of them that I've encountered, they just are appalled that you would read even. So what's a person supposed to do?
I get that, and I'm a doctor. So a couple of years ago, probably because I was involved in a startup, I started getting high blood pressure, which is now actually resolved. And I told my doctor, "Gee, my erections are 50% less hard on this particular medication. It was lisinopril." He said, "Well, that can't be true. Here it is. Here's the data. It is true. And maybe maybe you shouldn't be prescribed this as your first line medication in men my age." I don't think I persuaded him. The American Heart Association makes its recommendations, and they're not taking into consideration the impact on someone's sexual health.
Right.
It's my hope, though, that by empowering people with knowledge that eventually, as more and more people use the device, the doctors and there are going to be four papers published about the device using the device for monitoring testosterone therapy for taking care of people with ED. I'm confident this what we're doing will become the standard of care. It might not be our device. It might be something made by Boston Scientific or Coloplast or Medtronic because they have a lot more money than we do. But that the data, the idea that one, you can monitor your cardiovascular health through your erections. That will become the standard of care, and also that you can make determinations directly about your sexual health and interventions that are proposed for utilize at home in privacy. This will become the norm.
Yeah, it's much more approachable when you can assess these things at home. You don't have the pressure. Everyone has like kind of like momentary amnesia when you go into the doctor's office and they, you know, you got 3.5 minutes to ask your question and then it just leaves you. So to be able to kind of go through this experience and get the data and have time to think about what your next steps are is an empowering idea. So yeah, tell people where they can buy these items. Tell them where they can keep in touch with the company to see what's next as far as research and products.
Sure. You can reach me personally at Elliot, Elliot, at myfirmtech.com. You can find us on Instagram as well, too. Well, that's more for fun than information. You can find them on LinkedIn as well. You can find the company at myfirmtech.com. And our products are, we're on Amazon now as well, too. Although, buy from us.
Yeah, those margins aren't so fun, are they?
No. But I'm happy to speak with people personally, and I probably handle 15, 20 calls from people a week about who are just seeking information. So my advice is, if you want to learn about your heart and sexual health, put a ring on it. If you want to perform better in bed, put a ring on it.
Well said. Thank you very much. This was great.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, you'll also like the one I did with the owner of an intimate care service for adults with disabilities about medically assisted sex. That's episode 158. Stay tuned next week when I talk with a Black man who has de-radicalized over 200 people out of the Ku Klux Klan by becoming friends with them.